What does VA mean to me?
A place for my daughter to call home. Thanks to the VA Home Loan.
A new lease on life. The best healthcare team I've ever had is here at VA.
An education and the opportunity to open doors I never thought possible with my GI Bill.
The financial support I need to manage the disabilities I develop because of my service.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to push past all the noise from the recent headlines and really look at the strategic shifts, both political and legal, that are shaping what comes next.
Exactly. We're not just looking at who won the last round. We're asking who's being set up to win the next one.
That's the key. And our sources today are pretty varied. We're covering the fallout from the government shutdown, some truly explosive political revelations, and even a surge in new candidates.
And we're setting all of that against a pretty stark historical warning for the 2026 midterms.
So our mission for you is to pull out those essential nuggets of strategy and risk. We want you to see the machinery working behind the scenes. Let's start with the end of that marathon 43-day government shutdown.
Right. And the vote that ended it, hashtag tagged I tag I, the aftermath of the government shutdown.
So the stopgap bill, it passed the House 222 to 209. And if you look at the vote breakdown, you can immediately see where the pressure points are. Let's start with the Democrats.
The six Democrats who crossed the aisle to vote with Republicans. Yeah, these are people like Henry Cuellar from Texas or Marie Luzenkamp-Perez from Washington. And they represent, you know, the real front lines of competitive politics.
And what's the common thread there?
It's their districts. Every single one has a partisan voter index, or PVI, rating of R plus 1 to R plus 4.
So they're Democrats operating in territory that leans Republican.
Constantly. So for them, a vote like this is about showing independence from the party on spending. It's a survival tactic.
And then you have the flip side, which is maybe even more interesting. Two Republicans crossed over to vote with the Democrats.
Which is highly unusual on a big spending bill like this. One was Thomas Massie, who, you know, is a known iconoclast. He votes against almost all big spending.
Right. That's his brand. But the other one?
The other was Greg Stube, a conservative from a super red R plus 11 district in Florida. He had zero electoral reason to vote no.
So what was his motivation? It wasn't about the spending in general.
No, he was very specific. He said he was opposing a self-indulgent provision that he felt allowed certain senators to sue the Justice Department using taxpayer money. He called it garbage.
And the reaction from his own side?
Oh, it was immediate and intense. The online vitriol was incredible. He was called a rhino, a traitor, the whole playbook.
Which really says a lot about the internal party dynamics right now.
It does. They were even attacking him for a Senate race he isn't running in. I mean, he's a member of the House. It just showed how detached some of the outrage was.
Okay, so all this internal fracturing sets the stage for the big strategic question. Why did the Democrats ultimately surrender and end the shutdown? Some sources say that was the real victory.
Right. This brings us to what Jonathan V. Last calls the touch the stove theory.
I like the sound of that.
It's really smart political thinking. JVL, who is a Republican critic of Trump, he argued that the absolute worst thing for Democrats would have been to win a big concession, like restoring health insurance subsidies until 2026.
Wait, hang on. Preventing huge health care hikes. How is that a bad outcome for Democrats? That feels counterintuitive.
It is. But think about it. If you prevent a bad thing from happening, do voters give you credit for the crisis that didn't happen?
Rarely. They just take the stability for granted.
Exactly. By ending the shutdown without those subsidies, Trump and the GOP now have to own what comes next. And what comes next is rising health care costs for everyone.
So the idea is that you only get political credit when voters actually feel the pain.
Precisely. By the time the next midterms roll around, voters could have been paying way higher premiums for nearly a year. That pain, you know, touching that hot stove, that's what mobilizes your base and gives the other side a really difficult issue to defend. Hashtag #tactoo, the Epstein documents and legislative momentum.
So just as the shutdown drama was fading, this absolute bombshell drops from House Democrats. We're talking about the Jeffrey Epstein emails.
And the information in them was, well, it was staggering. The sources detail emails where Epstein wrote that Donald Trump knew about the girls.
And that Trump spent hours at his house with Virginia Giuffre.
Right. And maybe the most damaging part, Epstein apparently remarked to Ghislaine Maxwell that it was amazing no one had connected Trump to his whole operation.
If that stands up, it changes the entire political landscape. And we saw an immediate legislative consequence, didn't we?
Immediately.
Yeah.
This news just completely took over. It provided the political cover and the energy needed for the Massey Bill discharge petition.
And for anyone listening, a discharge petition is basically a way for members to force a vote on a bill that leadership is blocking.
And that's what happened. A Democrat, Adelita Grijalva, cast her first ever vote, and it was the 218th signature needed. It forced the issue.
So what's the outlook for that bill now?
Well, under the rules, the petition has to ripen for 7 legislative days. But Speaker Mike Johnson has already said he's going to schedule the vote quickly.
So he's going to rip the Band-Aid off, so to speak. Why not just let it sit there?
Because the longer he waits, the more the story hurts his party. And there's always the risk that more documents could leak. I mean, they have 23,000 pages from Epstein's lawyers.
Wow.
So by scheduling the vote, he manages the damage and gets it over with. House passage seems, I think, inevitable now. You'll probably see dozens of Republicans join in.
But that's where it stops, right? It goes to the Senate, and the majority leader soon doesn't have to bring it up for a vote.
Correct. And even if it passed, the chance of Trump signing it is, as one source put it, approximately 0.00%.
So what's the real significance here if it's not going to become law?
The significance is the political shift. 6 months ago, the idea of the House passing this bill was pure fantasy. The fact that a few emails could force a vote this quickly, it just shows how fragile the whole system is to these kinds of revelations. This story is definitely not over. #tag3, the grassroots surge and new candidates.
And that volatility we're talking about is being mirrored at the grassroots level. Our sources are pointing to something called the Mamdani effect.
Yeah, this is inspired by Zoran Mamdani's election as mayor of New York City. And the reason it was so galvanizing is the scale of the victory.
Right. He's not just a mayor. He's overseeing an organization with 280,000 employees and, $110 billion budget?
A budget bigger than Target or Disney. It showed that a young, unconventional progressive could win a massive, powerful executive position. It made that kind of success feel viable.
And the numbers back that up.
Oh, absolutely. An organization called Run for Something, which helps young progressives, saw over 4,000 people sign up to run for office right after Mamdani's win.
And that's on top of a surge of 10,000 earlier in the year. That's a huge wave of new energy.
It is. But there is a cautionary note in the sources. One strategist warned you can't just clone Mamdani's campaign and drop it in, say, rural South Carolina.
The message has to fit the place.
Exactly. But the universal theme, the thing that seems to work everywhere, is this idea that the country is on the wrong track and current leaders are failing the people.
And why is that specific message so powerful right now?
Because it taps into this shared frustration with institutions. It doesn't matter if you're worried about healthcare costs in a city or the economy in a small town. It's an anti-establishment message that lets a candidate harness that national anger and apply it to local problems.
Speaking of new energy, we have a huge new name entering the scene. John Bouvier Kennedy Schlossberg, JFK's grandson, is apparently running for Congress in New York.
Right. And at 32, he gets compared to Mamdani, young, progressive, good on social media. But he comes with these incredible built-in advantages.
The name, for one.
The name, the Yale and Harvard law background, and crucially, access to basically every major Democratic donor in the country. He has the history and the momentum of the new guard all at once. He's a formidable candidate from day one.
All right. Let's pivot to the next big election cycle, the 2026 midterms, and some of the risks brewing under the surface. The sources draw a really striking parallel to the 1894 midterms. What happened then?
1894 was a complete political bloodbath for the Democrats. They lost 114 House seats. That's 32% of their entire caucus.
Wow. Was that just the economy?
The economy was a factor, sure. But the losses were made so much worse because Democrats had been, as the sources say, too greedy with their gerrymandering. They created what's called a dummy-mander.
A dummy-mander. So the problem wasn't that the districts were bad, but that they were too perfect, too aggressive.
That's the trap. They drew tons of districts with really thin margins, like 53% or 55%, to maximize their number of seats. But when the national mood shifted just a little bit, those thin margins collapsed everywhere, all at once.
Like a house of cards.
Precisely. And the sources warn that 2026 could, well, it could rhyme with 1894.
What are the factors that are aligning to create that risk?
It's sort of a four-part problem. One, aggressive mid-decade gerrymandering. Two, using bad data that doesn't account for shifting voter behavior.
Yeah.
Three, a very energized base, in this case, driven by negative feelings about Trump. And four, a weak economy. It's a dangerous mix.
And we're already seeing some pushback against that aggressive map drawing, right,
mm-hmm.
in Kansas.
Yes, exactly. In Kansas, the GOP leadership tried to redraw the map to target Sherrese David's D+2 district, but they needed a special session, and at least 10 Republicans refused to go along with it.
And there were consequences for that dissent.
Big consequences. Leadership immediately stripped them of their committee chairmanships. One of them, Representative Clark Sanders, warned that the whole stunt just gives Democrats a club to beat us over the head with. It shows how high stakes the strategy is.
Finally, let's look at the Supreme Court. They've agreed to hear a case out of Mississippi about late arriving absentee ballots. What are the stakes here?
So granting cert means the case is on, and the stakes are huge. The RNC is arguing that election day means all ballots have to be received by that day, even if they were postmarked earlier.
And if the court agrees with that?
It would upend voting procedures in more than a dozen states. It would invalidate millions of votes that are currently counted.
And this is where overseas voters, especially the military, become a huge factor.
A crucial factor. International mail can take weeks. You have active duty soldiers whose ballots, even if mailed on time, might not arrive until after election day.
And taking away the right to vote from active duty soldiers is.
It's a politically toxic look, to say the least. That's a point that will almost certainly come up in oral arguments and could really influence the court's thinking.
So we've connected the dots.
Yeah.
The fallout from the shutdown is creating future political pain. These document leaks are forcing immediate legislative action, and new candidates are harnessing all this grassroots energy.
And it's all happening against this backdrop of major structural risks, like the Dummymander and these potential Supreme Court rulings.
What's the final takeaway for you, our listener?
The takeaway is this incredible convergence of volatility. You have these thinly drawn, gerrymandered districts, and you combine that with either super high voter turnout or voter suppression from a court ruling. Small shifts in sentiment could lead to massive, unexpected outcomes. We could see another political shock, just like in 1894.
Which leaves us with a final question for you to think about. If that political climate does shift dramatically, will these aggressive gerrymandering strategies we've talked about be seen, in hindsight, as the ultimate Dummymander, the very thing that set the stage for a spectacular political collapse? Something for you to research further.